Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Governor Ron DeSantis is lifting age restrictions on who can get the coronavirus vaccine. The Florida Democratic Party is touting a big fundraising haul, and legislation to overhaul Florida's election rules keeps advancing. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns and Gannett State Capitol Bureau reporter John Kennedy. But first, that music means it's time to pick some numbers. John, you have a number for us today?
I do, Zach. I'm going three digits this week. My number is 141.
All right. How about you, Antonio?
I'm going to go fairly low with 47.
47, and I am going to be the lowest here at 17. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Governor Ron DeSantis announced today that the age to get a vaccine will drop to 40 on Monday, and then the age restriction will be eliminated completely on April 5th, with anyone over 18 allowed to get the shot. The vaccine still hasn't been deemed safe for children under 18 yet. John, the governor was facing pressure because some vaccine sites weren't operating at full capacity, mostly in areas with a lot of younger people. Some Florida mayors had begun allowing younger individuals to get vaccinated, and the Biden administration also undercut the governor's senior first strategy with different rules for federal vaccination sites. Was the governor's hand basically forced on this?
Well, it does kind of seem like, you know, supply is finally outstripping demand, maybe. And yes, we saw the governor just this past week have a dust up with Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings, who had dropped his county's vaccination age to 40 and said he did not need the governor's authorization or any kind of acknowledgement from the governor to do that, which the governor disagrees with. But nonetheless, Orange County was going ahead with it. And again, it all came down to, in many respects, some counties are, you know, meeting what they consider to be an effective level of vaccination for those that are eligible now, seniors, and then those down to age 60 and above, and then 50 and above. So, you know, as supply increases, and indeed the Biden administration with the goal of May 1st getting everybody vaccinated in this country, or at least those that want it, it did seem like the governor is in a position now where he is following what, you know, is public demand. And he seems to think that supply is there. Though, as I've mentioned before on this show, it seems like whenever the age is dropped, there is a segment of older Floridians that just have not gotten through on the online only kind of service. People that don't have cell phones, don't have email addresses, you name it. There's a number of reasons. I guess the state is trying to do a more enhanced reach out to some of these seniors, but, you know, to a certain extent, they're just not getting through, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky balance for the governor, because especially in areas where you have a lot of younger people, where the population isn't quite as old, you know, places like where you live, John, in Tallahassee, or maybe in Gainesville, a college town, other places, you know, it does seem like they've already vaccinated the vast majority of the seniors, and there's some of the vaccine sites are not operating at full capacity, and they could really benefit from having the age eligibility dropped. Whereas some other places, like down here where I live in Southwest Florida, where it's a very senior heavy population, you still have a significant number of people, whether they're 65 and older or 60 and older or 50 and older, who have not gotten the vaccine yet. And now they will be competing with people 18 and older to get the vaccine. So there could be some grumbling there. I guess we'll have to wait and see. The Florida Democratic Party announced this week that the party had raised $2 million with the help of billionaire former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. The fundraising haul helps a party that had been in disarray back on firm financial footing. Antonio, this money is a lifeline for the Democrats, but it's going to take a lot more cash if the party is going to have a chance of knocking off Governor DeSantis this year. Is there any reason to believe that the party will have the resources to be competitive against a governor whose approval rating and fundraising have been on the rise?
Well, first of all, guys, I remember a big news flash about this time last year when billionaire Michael Bloomberg disbanded his presidential campaign. That was right after the Florida primary last March 17, when Bloomberg dropped out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination and announced that he was prepared to spend up to $100 million to help Joe Biden win Florida. I don't know if that amount was spent or not, but Bloomberg did spend considerably to defeat former fellow New Yorker Donald Trump here in the Sunshine State. And, well, we know how that turned out. Trump won Florida's 29 electoral college votes by more than 3 percentage points, a landslide by Florida standards. Yes, look, money is always important, but so is a ground game, messaging and candidates. If it was all about money, then maybe the Democrats' fortunes in Florida would have been different in 2020. When they lost the state to Trump, not only that, but also lost 2 congressional seats that were held by Democrats and a few more state legislative seats. So, you know, it's not just about the money. And, you know, Florida Democrats have a lot of obstacles to overcome next year. One will be bench strengthening candidates. Look, other than Nikki Fried, the Democrats don't have a candidate who has won a statewide race and has a statewide campaign infrastructure. Two is that they have to gin up voter enthusiasm among two parts of the base that have not been there for Democrats on a consistent basis, Black and Hispanic voters. Black voters were key in helping Biden win the Florida primary a year ago, but their turnout in November was not enough to overcome the major gains from GOP voter registrations, Trump Nation enthusiasm, plus a surprising surge in Hispanic votes for Trump. And Hispanic voters have been trending for the GOP for a while now, so that spells trouble for Democrats next year. And third is the issue of message. You mentioned DeSantis' rising popularity. The governor is going to campaign on a theme that goes something like this, I think, next year. Basically, I reopened the economy and got your jobs back. That is going to appeal to a lot of Florida voters next year. So how are Democrats going to counter that? We know from former governor and now U.S. Senator Rick Scott that campaigning on job creation plays as strongly in Florida as campaigning on tax cuts and accusing your rival of being a communist. I will close with this. I started by mentioning Bloomberg's campaign in Florida. You guys remember who was one of his Florida campaign co-chairs? Why? It was Manny Diaz, the former Miami mayor, who is now chairman of the Florida Democratic Party. So Democrats should hope that Diaz learned a couple of lessons from that Bloomberg flameout last year that may help them be more competitive next year.
Yeah, it seems like this money sort of gets them out of the ditch, but it by no means makes them competitive in 2022. And as we've seen in the last presidential cycle, you got to start spending money early, to reach Hispanic voters, to organize, to register voters. And it's not clear to me that the party really has the money to do that at this point. Expanding Florida's Medicaid program to cover more low-income Floridians has long been something of a holy grail for healthcare advocates in the state, and one of the most contentious issues in recent year. The closest Florida came to expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act was in 2015, when then Governor Rick Scott and the Republican-controlled Senate wanted to expand, but the Republicans in the House refused. Now, Republican House Speaker Chris Sprouls is saying that he wants to expand Medicaid so that women who've just had a baby are covered on the program for a full year. John, this is a pretty limited expansion, but it's still significant, isn't it? This is the first time, really, that Republicans in the House have favored expanding Medicaid in any way.
Yeah, it is quite a step. This expansion, which could cover about 98,000 new moms in Florida covered by Medicaid, is part of the $1.9 trillion stimulus package that was approved by the Democratic-controlled Congress, and it had been advanced by President Biden. Sprouls, though, a conservative Republican, in announcing his support, he somehow managed to avoid mentioning that history, the fact that Biden and the Democratic Congress pushed this. But whatever, it's still a huge step for a Republican House Speaker in Florida to give anything involving the words Medicaid expansion an okay. As you pointed out, Zach, it was the House back in 2015, although under a different leadership, that killed any chance of the state doing a larger Medicaid expansion. Now Florida is only is one of only 12 states now that haven't expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, which now is more than 10 years old, remarkably. But where this effort goes now, it's a little unknown. The Senate has not shown any interest in the expansion now. Again, it's a little bit of a role reversal from where we were in 2015 when the Senate was the advocate for Medicaid expansion. But this is $240 million that could come in, only $92 million being the state match. So, you know, why wouldn't the state take up this limited expansion that would provide health coverage to lower income and working moms for a year instead of the 2 months that they currently get under Medicaid? Democrats have been kind of rattling this issue of Medicaid expansion. Congressman Charlie Crist, you know, who we've talked about before as somebody considering a run to challenge Governor DeSantis next year, he's been talking up the idea of Medicaid expansion in Florida, the big expansion, which could cover almost a million Floridians and be the one approved and, you know, similar to the one that 38 other states now have, including many Republican-led states. But realistically, that's off the table for now here. But with Sprouls making this move, maybe that's a sign that some of the ice is melting on this idea. If Sprouls can get this idea through, maybe talk of a larger expansion of Medicaid becomes more viable Republican for the state's Republican leaders going forward, probably in years ahead. I don't see it anytime soon. But then again, I wouldn't have seen Chris Sprouls as an advocate on this, nor on climate change, another issue that he is stepping up on this year as well. So there are some surprises in this Florida legislature.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting development. I mean, maybe Donald Trump's influence has something to do with this. I mean, Trump was certainly not afraid to embrace entitlement programs and more spending. Antonio, what are your thoughts on Republicans taking money from this stimulus bill to expand Medicaid in Florida?
Well, you know, I think we should also note that the American Rescue Plan has further raised the stakes in this debate over expanding Medicaid. I covered a Zoom briefing featuring Health and Human Secretary Xavier Becerra, who has been on his post less than a week, and Congressman Ted Deutch, a Boca Raton Democrat. They heralded how the American Rescue Plan, which President Biden signed last week, expands access to health insurance in Florida, and they called on Florida state Republican leaders to take advantage of what they say was an additional potential windfall from federal dollars by expanding Medicaid. And what Deutch added that, you know, millions of U.S. workers lost coverage last year when they lost their jobs as the economy shut down to stem the coronavirus pandemic. And even as the economy begins to recover and workers are hired back, many still lack coverage. The rescue plan, Becerra and Deutch said, has new additional incentives to expand Medicaid in Florida so those individuals can get health coverage. Plus, he said the state can end up with more than $1 billion in federal funding above the cost of paying for broader Medicaid enrollments because of matching funds to help pay for existing enrollees on top of payments for expansion. Scott Darius, who is with Florida Voices for Health, actually broke down the numbers a bit more precisely. He calculated the state could get access to between $3 billion and $3.5 billion in added funds under the stimulus plan. After subtracting the cost of providing Medicaid to the additional people to be covered, the state would be looking at a gain of $1.26 billion. He called it a budget windfall, and that's money that Florida could use for other purposes, they said. More importantly, they all said, was getting coverage for another 800 to 1,000 million people now without coverage because of having, you know, the job losses from the pandemic. And State Senator Annette Dale, a Democrat from Miami, said those residents are in what she called Florida's coverage gap, and would gain access to medical care if the state legislature would agree to accept federal money to expand Medicaid in it through the rescue plan. So whether that will convince recalcitrant GOP state leaders remains to be seen, like John just said, but clearly Democrats in Washington have raised the ante on this debate.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, they focused on pregnant women. Obviously, that's a very sympathetic group. In the past, you know, there's been efforts to actually restrict Medicaid and put in work requirements and other things. So it is a big change. But, you know, actually going full steam ahead and doing a full blown Medicaid expansion, I mean, the state would get a lot of federal money. It's still like a 90% match or something like that. But The amount that the state would have to put in has been enough to keep lawmakers from resisting this for a long time. And we'll see if the federal government continues to sweeten the pot, if that changes. Well, one of the most significant pieces of legislation put forward this year continued to advance this week as House Republicans unveiled their version of a bill that would put new restrictions on voting, including mail ballot requests and ballot drop boxes. John, you've been covering this bill closely. The House version is not as aggressive as the Senate version, right?
That's right. This time, the House is not going as far as the Senate has proposed with overhauling Florida's elections law, but the House would keep drop boxes, but limit where they can be placed, mostly to early voting sites during early voting hours. They'd require that elections officials man these boxes and have a video camera on them. So, that's a hurdle potentially for elections officials. But the Senate, of course, by contrast, they'd get rid of the drop boxes altogether. The House measure is sponsored by Representative Blaise Ingolia. He's a Spring Hill Republican and former state Republican chair, and he's giving one of the biggest concessions in the bill. It kind of follows criticism in that it allows any vote by mail requests made last year to remain valid for next year's contests. That would include Governor DeSantis's expected reelection bid. The Senate would wipe out those requests from last year and make everybody wanting a mail-in ballot to put these requests back to the election supervisors again next year. The supervisors have said this is going to be a costly bureaucratic nightmare. First they'd have to notify voters that their request is no longer valid, and then they would have to process what would presumably be a flood of new requests that they'd get. Of course, one of the sneaky subtexts to this is that the Senate requirement would erase what amounts to a 800,000 voter lead that registered Democrats currently hold in vote by mail requests if they carried over from last year when President Trump, remember, told Republicans not to use mail ballots because they are subject to fraud, which, of course, we're still waiting to see proof of that. Nonetheless, Ingolia, in his bill, he grandfathers in those requests. So that softens one of the most obvious political ploys in these attempts to redo elections law, which are happening in most states, fueled by Republicans filing bills that are sort of ripped from the headlines of last year's presidential election. There's 250 bills now filed in 43 states that would restrict voting access in one form or another, most of them filed by Republicans. While the House measure doesn't go as far as what the Senate has proposed, it does target many of the same election areas that include adding a controversial new signature match requirement and a prohibition of counties receiving funding from private organizations to improve election services. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg very famously provided $350 million nationwide last fall to help elections officials when the federal government didn't offer any help with heightened demands that were caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Florida counties received millions of dollars of this in support, but Republicans have been blasting this aid as a potential interference. Ingolia specifically said it was government's role to run elections. This kind of goes back to a sort of a Fox News fueled fight between Republicans and Mark Zuckerberg, it seems like right now. Republicans, though, are clearly trying to tilt the table in their favor heading into next year and most likely the next presidential contest, which may be the real worry here. But remember, a record 11.1 million voters cast ballots in Florida last November, 43% of them by mail. And of those, about 1.5 million used drop boxes. I think we're going to see this legislation continue to soften up some as the legislature enters its last month here. Because I think what Republicans are going to start hearing is from a lot of their own voters, maybe not the ones who bought the Trump line about don't trust mail-in ballots, but I think they're going to hear from the ones that love the convenience of mail ballots and drop boxes. And we all remember that Republicans used to be very adept at using vote by mail before last year. So It'll be curious to see where this all unfolds, what this legislation looks like in the end, because I don't think Florida Republicans want to take heat from their own voters if the next election becomes too complicated or they do something that could possibly throw things off the rails in Florida, as they often seem to happen. That could be pretty disruptive, especially with Ron DeSantis's name on the ballot.
Antonio, this bill purports to address voter fraud, but it doesn't address something that's happening right now in the state, a possible case of election fraud involving the recruitment of third party candidates. Former state senator Frank Artilis was indicted recently and charged with paying a third party candidate to run in a race. Some lawmakers on the Democratic side are saying, hey, you know, if you want to address election fraud, address cases like this.
Yeah, gentlemen, stop the presses, kill the lead story. You know, Zach, why don't you call Sidney Powell, and John, you can call Rudy Giuliani, because in fact, as you just said, Zach, we may have found a real life example of election fraud in Florida in the 2020 election. And it turns out, according to the charges filed in Miami-Dade last week, that there may have been election tampering in a state Senate race, and that tampering could have radically altered the outcome. So, but here's the thing is, as you mentioned, it has nothing to do with mail-in ballots. It also has nothing to do with drop boxes, nor does it have anything to do with so-called ballot harvesting. No, it has to do with an alleged sham candidate inserted into a race to confuse voters. And wait for it, it wasn't a Democratic fraud effort. Nope. According to charges filed by Miami-Dade prosecutors, it was a Republican who masterminded the shenanigans to help a Republican candidate defeat an incumbent Democrat. The Republican mastermind, as you just said, is former state senator Frank Artilis. Now, you may recall Artilis resigned from his seat sometime around 2017 after an alleged outburst of profanity and racial slurs against another Florida state lawmaker. Now, in this case last week, prosecutors say Artilis cooked up the scheme to place a sham candidate in the race against then incumbent state senator Javier Rodriguez. That pseudo candidate's name was also Rodriguez. And despite not having much of a campaign, that other Rodriguez is said to have siphoned off enough votes to cost the incumbent Democratic Senator Rodriguez his reelection. Artilis is accused of having funded the effort, which is the crime that the prosecutors say he committed. The Republican that won the race, by the way, is Ileana Garcia, who was one of the founders of the Latinas for Trump groups. She won the race by several hundred votes after the pseudo Rodriguez candidate garnered 6,400 votes. So you can see where Javier Rodriguez, the former state senator, has a claim here. So it appears to turn out, that the lone serious case of a potential conspiracy to commit election fraud in the 2020 election in Florida, it was an age-old trick. Now, I've been following state politics down here in the 305 for almost 40 years. And let me tell you something, sham candidates, that is a classic election ploy. It's such an old ploy, by the way, that I think it even predates Roger Stone's dirty tricks. It's been used by everyone, Republicans and Democrats. But this time, authorities say it was pulled by a Republican against a Democrat, so a Trumpian candidate could win.
And the difference, Antonio, is that Artiles is actually being accused of paying this third party candidate, which is what makes it a crime.
Yes. But I'm telling you, man, this is something that every election you can find. I mean, there you can write a book on how these sham candidates, in some cases, even one case I can remember back in the 80s, a guy actually won. But as they said, song says, isn't it ironic? But I bet you won't hear much about this in Tallahassee's election fraud debates and reform debates, because as the action says, let the facts get in the way of a good rant.
Yeah, pretty wild story there, but it doesn't seem like it. That issue is going to be included in this election bill. Well, we'll move on to our numbers here. John, you had 141. Tell us about that.
I did, Zach. 141 is million dollars is what would be left in the state's Affordable Housing Trust Fund after the state's Republican legislative leaders take almost $300 million of the money and use it elsewhere. That is the plan that was unveiled this week by House Speaker Chris Sprouls and Senate President Wilton Simpson. they want to use this money on their own favored infrastructure projects. Sprawls wants to create a fund to help cities and counties first assess their climate change related needs and then give them money for projects to offset the flooding and road damage and other problems. Simpson wants to use the housing money to create a big fund to finance local government wastewater projects to help with septic to sewer conversions in a lot of rural communities, kind of like where he's from in Pasco County. So the two leaders have ambitious ideas, but it comes at the expense of lower income Floridians and those that are struggling to buy affordable housing or find apartments. It's a very familiar story here at the Capitol, with Republican governors and leaders having steered $2.3 billion intended for affordable housing away from that subject during this century. So we've had 20 years of these kind of diversions of money. In fact, only 5 years this century has the legislature not raided the housing funds. They were really begun under late Democratic Governor Lawton Chiles when the legislature in 1992 started directing a portion of the state's documentary stamp tax, that's involving real estate transactions, to help finance affordable housing. The money balloons when the housing is much in demand, like now, when there are a lot of transactions going on. But the program is designed that way to get bigger when demand is high and affordability is challenged. Housing has gotten really hard to find and expensive in Florida amid this pandemic, with low interest rates driving home buying and prices going up. But for those who've lost jobs or had hours reduced because of COVID-19's effect on tourism, this is a hard time to be looking for an affordable place to live. Instead, though, legislators typically look at that big pile of doc stamp money like a big chalupa. They grab the chalupa and they scatter it across other parts of the budget, just like Simpson and Sprawls are now looking to do. Democrats, of course, oppose the takeaway, but they don't have the numbers to stop it. But curious to see here whether this continues. Governor DeSantis, another Republican, has been something of an advocate for spending affordable housing money where it's supposed to go. So he could be a wild card in this money shift debate. The session isn't over yet. We'll see if he steps in and tries to stop this money grab by his fellow Republicans.
And this seems like an area where lawmakers are really out of sync with public sentiment. I mean, you hear at the local government level on up people complaining about the cost of housing and wanting more affordable housing. There's a lot of pressure on local government officials to increase affordable housing. But it's something, as you said, John, that lawmakers do every year. It's an enticing pot of money, and they don't seem to face any consequences for raiding it. So if people aren't going to hold them accountable for it, I guess they're going to continue to do it. Well, Antonio, your number is 47. Tell us about that.
Well, gentlemen, I'm not sure I can compete with the reference to a big chalupa, but I will give it a shot. So 47 is the number of press releases that have been issued by former President Trump's Office of the Former President and the Save America PAC. Now, much has been made of Trump's ban from social media, especially from his highly watched, followed, and read Twitter account. While President Trump rifled off more than 25,000 tweets between January 20, 2017, and when he was banned in early January of this year after the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. A quick calculation shows that on average, you know, Trump was tweeting about 17 times per day. Contrast that with a total of just 47 old school press releases than the past 64 days he's issued. And now you understand why Trump has a communications gap. And by the way, of those 47 old school press releases, 12 came from the Save America PAC and ended up in my junk mail, so I never even saw them. Now, public relations and political strategists told me this week that Trump can't control the political narrative in the long run without some sort of digital messaging platform. So perhaps that's why some of his current aides have said he plans to launch his own digital domain in the coming months. This has long been speculated. And so for those in MAGA Nation just going through Trump social media withdrawal, It looks like he may soon be back.
Yeah, I was kind of it was interesting when I first got one of those Trump press releases. It was like he's just tweeting via press release now. It's kind of funny, but somehow they started coming to my personal email address even. Well, my number is 17, as in 17% of Republicans say they would support Ron DeSantis for president in a new national poll from Echelon Insights released this week. DeSantis was leading in the poll with former Vice President Mike Pence in second and U.S. Senator Ted Cruz in third. That's right, more presidential buzz for DeSantis, who's been getting a lot of it lately. A poll out of Iowa earlier this month showed DeSantis as the top pick among very likely Iowa caucus goers if Trump doesn't run. At least four polls recently have shown DeSantis as a leading candidate for the 2024 GOP presidential nomination. And it might seem crazy to start talking about Iowa this early, but the caucus will be here before we know it. And DeSantis certainly seems to be thinking about it. His recent press conferences touting his coronavirus response have been described as something of a soft launch for his presidential campaign. Of course, there's a little matter of getting reelected to governor first. And as anyone who follows the NCAA tournament this year has seen, all of the upsets, including my beloved Illinois going down to Loyola, you better play the game in front of you and not look too far ahead. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy, and thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe. We're out of here.